Welcome to the TaxCast from the Tax Justice Network. 30 minutes each month of news, scandal and analysis you won't find anywhere else. With me, Naomi Fowler. Coming up later on the TaxCast, making our politicians' tax returns public. But first, here's a quick roundup of this month's Tax Justice news. Another month, another round of banking fines. We've had guilty pleas this month from Barclays, JP Morgan, UBS, Citigroup and RBS over foreign exchange rigging. The very same day, Barclays shares rose 3% and RBS shares were up 2%. The European Union's Parliament has voted to make registers of the real owners of companies mandatory in all member states. There's a couple of areas that need tightening up, though. The registers won't be fully public. You'll have to demonstrate a legitimate interest to be able to search for registers. And this new EU law doesn't include all trusts. It only provides for the collecting of partial information on those ones that are deemed to have tax relevance. Still, it's progress. In Los Angeles in the United States, the city council there's voted overwhelmingly to raise the minimum wage from $9 an hour to $15. And speaking of minimum wage, the EU's about to investigate allegations made by trade unions that McDonald's avoided $1 billion in tax using our old friend Luxembourg. If anyone still thought fossil fuels were cheap, an IMF report has found they're subsidised by $10 million a minute. I don't know about you, but I'd rather the world's tax dollars were spent on subsidising renewable energy instead. Egypt's losing an estimated $650 million a year in tax revenue because companies are using tax havens to shield their profits. That's according to the Egyptian Initiative for Personal Rights. Their report's called Tax Tourism: A Nail in the Coffin of Social Justice. It says it all. Campaigning organisation Avaaz is challenging the British tax authorities in court over granting HSBC's Swiss branch of tax dodgers an amnesty. And finally, it looks like Brazilian football players have been selected by a secret Cayman Islands company based on their marketing value. And we thought it was all about talent. A Brazilian newspaper alleges former president of the Brazilian Football Federation and his father-in-law, the former president of FIFA, got paid $40 million for it. It could explain Brazil's dismal performance in the World Cup. Those are the TaxCast news headlines for this month. Now we're going to talk to John Christensen of the Tax Justice Network for his take on this month. Right, John. Well, this month we've got to really start with the results of the British general election, if our TaxCast listeners can excuse the UK focus for a few minutes. But it does have a lot of global implications, doesn't it? I mean, this was a win by the Conservative Party, a victory that's great news for the UK's tax havens, the City of London, hedge funds, the big four accountancy firms, big corporations, the banks, the rich. And let's remember who funds the Conservative Party, of course, and that a lot of the British media is owned by billionaires.
You know, superficially, this seems to be a massive victory for tax haven London. But let's look a little bit deeper. First of all, we have a dramatic swing in Scotland, away from England. And the Scottish Nationalist Party has come to power, taking virtually every seat in Scotland. And importantly, the Scottish Nationalist Party has renounced its earlier commitment to tax competition. For a long time, it's one of its key economic measures. They have said that they no longer see it as being in Scotland's interest. Importantly also, they're firmly in favour of remaining within the European Union. And that's going to be interesting because we now have a clearly very, very divided situation between Scotland and England. We're not yet clear whether the Prime Minister Cameron will carry forward on his earlier commitment to creating a registry for beneficial ownership in Britain and all of Britain's tax haven offshore satellites, the Crown dependencies and the overseas territories. So it's not clear whether we're going to see any progress there or what Britain's position will be more generally in moving forward with automatic information exchange and country-by-country reporting. But I think what's been really noticeable is the extent to which the elections have disguised the deep fault lines now emerging within the British economy. Overvalued sterling, deepening household debt, lower investment. If we look outside the property markets in London, investment is at a very, very weak level. Weak productivity, which is massively below the French level, for example, and continued over-dependence on the financial services sector. What the elections did reveal was the huge political influence of the City of London. The Electoral Commission in Britain found in 2014 that the bulk of donations to the Conservative Party came from the financial lobbies, from banks, hedge funds and multinational corporations. The Labour Party also received large donations from financial sector, including PricewaterhouseCoopers, which we all know as a large purveyor of tax avoidance schemes, notoriously associated with LuxLeaks and the violation of human rights of the whistleblower in LuxLeaks, Antoine Deltour, and more recently the attack on the journalist behind LuxLeaks, Edouard Perrin. So we're seeing, you know, a very strong political capture here. It was also clear during the run-up to the elections that the five billionaires who dominate the British media, and all of whom use tax havens extensively for their personal affairs, or in one case are non-domiciled, were massively misinforming their readers. For example, we had some quite shocking attacks on the Scottish Nationalist Party and exaggerated claims being made about UK's economic performance. So, in summary, all of these factors confirmed, as far as I'm concerned, that Britain's democratic arrangements are increasingly in deficit. The first-past-the-post system of elections in Britain are simply unfit for the 21st century. They create very unrepresentative parliaments. It also shows that Britain is increasingly dominated by big finance. Newspapers are overwhelmingly in the hands of tax haven interests. The economy remains over-dependent on the City of London. Our analysis of Britain as a poster child of the finance curse is correct. Britain is deeply victim to the finance curse.
Right, and really incredible how the 1% have managed to convince enough of the 99% to vote against their own best interests. So reform needed all round, and I should just mention this report from the European Union that the UK is now the most unequal country in the whole of the European Union, and we've got what looks like wage inequality there even higher than US levels. That gap has really widened since 2008.
And sadly, it will widen even further because the tax policies of the past government and the current likely tax policies of the current government will make matters even worse.
OK, well, that's a depressing note to turn from one tax haven empire to another. So let's look at Singapore, ranked number 5 in the Tax Justice Network's Financial Secrecy Index. And of course, there's a new Financial Secrecy Index coming out later this year. We'll be covering the latest movers and shakers, if you want to call them that, on the Tax Cast. So with Singapore, it looks like they may have been clamping down on freedom of expression. So what's the story there?
There has never been a real free press in Singapore. There has never been much in the way of democratic politics. There are free parties able to express their views freely. It's been a pretty repressive society for at least the last 60 years. But at the beginning of May, a Singapore-based website called The Real Singapore was closed down by its own editors after the Singaporean Media Development Authority, and let's just pause for a second to think how sinister that one sounds, suspended the license, that is the license of the editors to operate the site, and ordered the editors to remove some of the site content. Just a couple of days before the site was closed down at the beginning of May, we picked up through our media monitoring process on an article published on the 1st of May, which was just 2 days before the closure. And that article hints at what might have really annoyed the authority. The title of the article was "The World's Biggest Tax Havens. Singapore ranked number 5. And the article itself goes on to discuss tax dodging, tax havens, and the Tax Justice Network's Financial Secrecy Index and talks about Singapore's role within the broader world of tax havenry. Now, of course, Singapore scores a very inglorious 70 points on the Financial Secrecy Index, which places it pretty much at the more secretive end of the index in what we call the secrecy danger zone. And since the government has set itself the aim of becoming the Switzerland of Asia, clearly Singapore is quite a major tax haven player. Now, I think that the closure of the Real Singapore website gives some feel for what lies behind the squeaky clean veneer that Singapore tries to present to the outside world. It has a long history of suppressing free speech, of stifling political dissent, and crushing the human spirit. In that respect, it's every bit as totalitarian as any totalitarian state you care to mention. And that's the reality of tax havens. Far from being the kind of places that libertarians like to rave about, where you get away from a crushing government burden, these are places that are designed by the rich and the powerful, for the rich and the powerful, and they really don't like to tolerate dissent.
Right, and that moves us on perfectly, actually, to just such a mentality of a Czech politician who's currently trying to create a small country on the banks of the Danube. It's 7 square metres and it's called Liberland. The Croatian government's not very happy about it because they say it's on their territory and have actually arrested this guy, I think, a couple of times for trespass.
As if Europe doesn't already dominate the world of tax havens, it's, you think about the number of European countries that are tax havens: Austria, Ireland, Luxembourg, Netherlands, Switzerland, and of course London, not to mention the more peripheral places like Cyprus, Malta, Monaco, Guernsey, Gibraltar, Jersey. I could go on and on. Isle of Man, San Marino. Now we have another one in the making. So far, it has a flag, it has a website, it has a national anthem, and it has a provisional government. What it doesn't have is any roads, any bus services, any hospitals, any schools, any banks, any phone services. It has no currency and no taxes to pay for any of the crucial services that most societies need. The lead founder, a certain Vít Jedlička, a Czech politician, committed to this kind of ultra-libertarian philosophy. So taxes won't be mandatory, but voluntary. Good luck trying to get people to pay voluntary taxes. And in Vít's words, Liberland will be an experiment in finding out the minimum amount of tax and regulation needed to live. So this is a libertarian paradise in the making. And if you take the trouble to check out the discussion forum on their website, what you'll find is it's attracting all sorts of nut jobs talking about anything from freedom for paedophilia, freedom for getting rid of car seat belts, alongside the right to carry any weapon you wish. This is the kind of freedom that's being discussed on the forum of the Liberland website. Unfortunately for Vít and his mates, there's a bit of a fly in the ointment, because the Croatian government disputes their claims to the territorial rights over Liberland and have denied him access to the land in question. Libertarians dream of this kind of place where, people will live in harmony without rules. But if they really want to see how tax havens turn out, perhaps they should look to what's happened in Singapore, where liberty, that is, real liberty to form political parties, to dissent from authority, and to express your views, is absolutely denied. That's the reality of so many of the tax havens around the world.
Thanks, John. John Christensen of the Tax Justice Network. Now it's time for the TaxCast special feature. It'd be nice to know that the politicians we elect to serve us are practicing what they preach. They tend to be at the top of the income ladder, with salaries way higher than national average in all countries. They're responsible for lawmaking and putting our taxes to the best use for all of us. So do they believe in contributing to their countries fairly or not? This month, the TaxCast looks at making our politicians' tax returns public.
It starts from the top, the rich class. And let's talk about the parliament. that is the only authority to impose the taxes. And if the parliamentarians, the member of parliament, won't pay the taxes, why should other people bother? And how can the parliament or the government can go after the other people?
That's award-winning journalist Umar Chima of the Centre for Investigative Reporting in Pakistan. Pakistan's only the fourth country in the world to make the tax returns of politicians public. And Umar Chima's the man who made that happen. But before we hear a bit more from him, let's just take the pulse of the UK and the US on this subject.
I've never released my tax returns. That's my private business, just like it's your own private business. It's a sideshow. That's all it is. The American people are asking the question, where are the jobs? They're not asking, where are the tax returns?
This is not important to me. Let me say this. What's important to me are jobs and the rest. The discussion about what the Republicans and how they deal with their nominee as to whether he should release, that's really up to them.
I don't pay more than are legally due. And frankly, if I had paid more than are legally due, I don't think I'd be qualified to become president.
He made $12.6 million in capital gains just in 2010, almost $5 million in ordinary income, ordinary dividends, and $3.3 million in taxable interest. All that stuff, that's taxed at 15%. So that's really important here.
You'll all do that, will
you? I'm going to publish my tax affairs for the last 3 years and let the public decide who's avoiding tax and who isn't.
Right. I'm very happy to say that I pay colossal sums in income tax and...
Indeed,
I'd love to see the full details of the former mayor's accounts.
Right, so you'll publish yours as well, will you?
Whatever is necessary to publish, I'll publish, yes.
Some high-profile politicians there of all political colours on both sides of the Atlantic discussing something that's still very controversial, their taxes. Back in 2012, the British Prime Minister David Cameron agreed to release his tax return and those of his entire cabinet, but he broke that promise. And those tax returns would have made an interesting read, considering half of the cabinet are multimillionaires with offshore trusts coming out of their ears. These are the same people currently making savage cutbacks to public services in the country. And it's not just government ministers. Former prime ministers like Margaret Thatcher and Tony Blair have been involved in tax avoidance. In the US, presidential candidate Mitt Romney famously got into hot water over releasing his tax returns amid all sorts of questions about his offshore accounts. And so, in Pakistan, Umar Chima's managed to bring about a level of transparency yet to happen in most of the rest of the world. So here I am talking to Umar Chima, a great privilege. You have done some incredible research and with some really amazing results. You dedicate your work to the poor of Pakistan who subsidise the rich through indirect taxes. Tell me a bit about what you mean by that.
Unfortunately, 75% revenue collection is done through the sale taxes, the general sale tax. And they are the ultimate sufferers of such indirect taxes.
Okay, and you're talking about something like a value-added tax. It's a sales tax, basically, on ordinary items that the poor must buy, and so it hits them disproportionately.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the rich can stay out of tax net with impunity, and the poor, they cannot even make up their household items without paying their taxes that they do through indirect taxes. So therefore, I use this word that the poor subsidize the rich in Pakistan. Parliamentarians at most of the places, they are rich people. They live in expensive houses. They drive on expensive vehicles. And they wear expensive dresses. But when it comes to tax, it seems as if they are the poorest in Pakistan, among the poorest in Pakistan.
Tell me about the situation in terms of tax that's paid in Pakistan. Only a small proportion of people even pay income tax for all kinds of different reasons.
Yeah, Pakistan is the second lowest country in terms of tax to GDP ratio. And less than 1% population pay the taxes. Obviously, no state can be run without the taxes. In case of Pakistan, it has been dependent on the foreign aid. This is one of the reasons that the tax culture has not flourished. A common person, he doesn't know that how much he is paying. They must be sensitized about it. And we need a coordinated campaign to connect everything with the tax. that whatever the decision is being taken by the government, how much money it is costing, and we must tell the people that what kind of share you have in it. The public health education delivery system, it's in a very bad shape. I wanted to do something. I wanted to highlight this issue. I kept writing to the members of parliament that provide me the information about your taxes. Just imagine that if the Bureau of Investigative Journalism or even the Tax Justice Network, they write every year to the member of parliament to tell about the taxes. And I'm sure that they will not provide the information, but keep publishing it every year that we ask for the information and they have not provided it.
Eventually, Uma Chima got hold of the identity card numbers of all parliamentarians from their public election nomination papers. Next, he managed to convince staff at the Federal Board of Revenue to leak the tax returns related to those identity numbers. Income tax is deducted automatically from parliamentarian salaries, but most of them have got all sorts of other incomes and salaries coming in. What did you expect to find with your research, and were you surprised?
It was shocking to note that there were around 70% members of parliament who didn't file the tax returns, including the president of Pakistan. And there were 90 members of parliament who didn't have national tax number that is required for filing the tax returns. But it created a lot of resonance. You know, everybody knew that very few people pay the taxes. But when you name the people, you shame the people, it turns into an impactful campaign. And then eventually it resulted in the government decision to make the tax data public. And then finance minister, he set a deadline that by that time, every member of parliament must register himself for the national tax number.
Okay, so take me through, if I want to know what a parliamentarian in Pakistan is paying in tax, how do I know now? So before I didn't know, there was no way to know.
Yeah, there was no way to know. You can go to website now at the Federal Board of Revenue, that is the tax authority like IRS, I think.
IRS in the States and HMRC in Britain.
Yes, yeah. It's the counterpart of your organization. It's called FBR, Federal Board of Revenue. If you go to the website, you can download the tax directory of the members of parliament. You can download the tax directory of the tax information of the citizen tax directory. So you can check that who paid how much. And if there is nobody in the tax list, it means that he has not filed the tax return.
And so this, you can look up not only the national parliament, but also the regional parliament,
yes.
And ordinary citizens.
So there are overall, I think 1,175 members of parliament, the federal and the provincials included. And there is one directory containing the information of all of them.
It's impressive to somebody like me in Britain because in 2012, the Prime Minister of Britain committed to publishing the tax returns of his entire cabinet, which is then something that he rode back on because he suddenly found it was very complicated, too complicated to publish that information. So, you know, in Britain, we're a very, very long way away from the process that has now come into force in Pakistan.
Interestingly, a senior finance ministry official told me that when the government of Pakistan announced the decision to make tax data public, they got to hear from the UK authorities that now we will come under pressure for doing the same in UK. I don't know when they do, but one should hope for the best, and the Tax Justice Network must use the example of Pakistan for pressuring the authorities in London.
Umar Chima's first report on the tax paid by politicians caused a sensation, and by the time of his second report, he didn't need to rely on whistleblowers in the Federal Board of Revenue because he could then use the new online system linking identity card numbers with tax returns filed or not filed. This time, in this new cold light of day, nearly half of legislators failed to file their tax returns. Previously, it was almost 70%. So there's some progress, but still a long way to go. The average parliamentarian has assets of $800,000 in Pakistan, and those who are paying are still only paying a pittance in tax on that. It says a lot, too, that in 25 years, no one's ever been convicted of income tax evasion.
What I realized now, why it is important for me to keep pushing, to keep highlighting the issue, is that we lack the enforcement mechanism. We keep shouting, but even the tax authorities know they are doing nothing, and the department is fully politicized, and so far the only change that has occurred is that the tax data has been made public. The system has not been improved, although now the government has made a tax reform commission in order to carry out reforms at how to make it a functioning department. I have guarded optimism because many attempts have been made in the past without, very few positive results. It all depends on the political will.
What do you hope to do in the future now with the research that you've done? You've exposed this issue. You have brought about real change in terms of transparency of declarations about what parliamentarians are paying and other political representatives. Where do you want to go next with this?
It's a big achievement, but the bigger challenge is ahead. First, we were focusing on the parliament. Now there is a directory of the parliamentarians. I'm now collecting data of the different professionals like the doctors, the lawyers, the media owners, then the, Chamber of Commerce, how much their members are paying. I have also requested the information of the board of directors of all the companies registered with the authorities in order to check that how many of them are the taxpayers. And then I think the narrative should also be bottom-top, that I must tell a cab driver through research that how much tax he is paying through purchasing household items. And then I must tell that if Prime Minister is going on a foreign visit and there is extra staff with him, so I must calculate the amount of money on one extra person traveling means that one cab driver has paid so much, contributed so much for them, in order to relate them with the public money. And the data is the first step, that how can we relate it with the public and how can we sensitize the public about it. We will not let it die, and the debate must continue. And the tax is very important for the sovereignty of Pakistan and for the prosperity of Pakistan. So that will be a huge contribution if we can make Pakistan a tax-compliant society. And by doing that, we can make it a success story to tell other people. And therefore, we are trying to play the role just by highlighting the issue, bringing it to a level where the authorities can be forced into taking action. This is what we are doing now.
For more information on Umar Cheema, his tax reports and the Centre for Investigative Reporting in Pakistan, go to www.cirp.pk. You've been listening to The Taxcast from the Tax Justice Network. It's available to everyone on www.tackletaxhavens.com, and it's also on the Tax Justice Network's blog, www.taxjustice.net/taxcast. You can subscribe to our RSS feed, to our Tax Justice Network YouTube channel. You can drop me an email on naomi@taxjustice.net, look for us on iTunes, or find us on a radio station near you. We'll be back next month.